This is Spectrum.
Alternative myth, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, and remember, you can never have too much information. Hey guys, how you doing this week? We've got a great guest this week. We've had him on before, Dr. Peter Glidden. I've got a quick bio for him here. For over two decades, Dr. Glidden has been treating people around the world with naturopathic therapeutics, including homeopathy, medical nutrition, heavy metal chelation, detoxification, herbal medicine, and bioidentical hormone supplementation. Dr. Glidden's current treatment protocol has perfected over two decades of clinical work, are unique in the field of naturopathic medicine. He is the only physician in the world to combine classical homeopathy, medical nutrition, and comprehensive clinical diet. Let's welcome Dr. Glidden. Hello, Peter. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you back again, second time.
Thanks a lot, Scott. It's always a pleasure. You and I are in the information dissemination business, right?
That's what we do. That's what we do. I want to specifically talk today about the use of pharmaceutical drugs in the mental health care industry. There's a lot of different avenues we can come at the pharmaceutical industry and talk about what's happening in that field. But specifically today, I want to talk about the mental health care system and how the use of counseling has reduced significantly. And it seems just to be now a case of the short term. They don't want to do the work involved to look at, get to the root of the problems. What they do is they go to the doctor. He'll give them a couple of, antipsychotics or something like that, if they're having various different problems, and then they're out the door, and it's a $300, $600 a month bill instead of actively pursuing ways to get to the root of the problem.
Well, you know, it's when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, number one. And also, medicine in North America is a for-profit business. It's a for-profit industry, especially in the United States. So it profits the medical system much more to dispense medication. They get much more return from that than they do to, you know, pay for a counselor, right? So that's one of the reasons why it's done. There are no laws in the United States that require anybody, any physician, to cure somebody, even if the cure exists. And medical doctors, MDs, practice allopathic medicine. It is one branch of medicine. But they have sold it to us for the last 100 years as being the only type of medicine, and they have painted everybody else, the chiropractors, the naturopaths, the homeopaths, the herbalists, the acupuncturists, the Ayurvedic medical people, they've painted everybody else as back-of-the-bus quacks. And quite frankly, it's an alarming thing that's happened. And most people in North America just kind of automatically assume in their de facto position that they view medicine from has the MDs at the top of the heap and everybody else underneath them, and really it's just nonsense, because medicine is like dogs, right? There's a lot of different types of dogs, and they're all good for certain things. If we've got a child that's lost in the wilderness, for goodness sake, you're not going to try to find him with a chihuahua, right? You need a bloodhound. That's exactly the right dog for the hunt. But because the only medicine that we have access to here, the only medicine that our insurance pays for, the only medicine we know anything about, the only medicine that they make TV shows and movies about is MD-directed pharmaceutical medicine, we automatically think that those guys, you know what, doesn't stink, and it couldn't be further from the truth. And because of the allopathic reductionistic philosophy that MDs bring to bear on treatments, their therapeutics must fail, and there is no greater example of this than in the field of psychiatry.
Yeah, exactly. People used to work through their problems emotionally and over time, and now it's almost like they're just putting the problems on hold. You know, take a medicine to reduce the symptoms that are surrounding the problems. And I don't know, it just seems odd to me.
Well, you know, here's an interesting point to ponder. You know, everybody's worldview, the things that we do, how we move through the world, regardless of our occupation, is informed in large part by our philosophy, right? You know, Buddhists think about the world in a particular way. Hindus think about the world in a particular way. Catholics and atheists and Jews, communists and Democrats and socialists all think about the world from different vantage points. And their philosophy informs their actions to a large extent. The philosophy that MDs are trained in, the aspect of medicine, the branch of medicine that MDs are trained in, is referred to as allopathic reductionism.
Mm-hmm.
And the philosophy of allopathic reductionism is that the human body is a machine made of parts. And when you're sick, you have to take the body apart with all of this diagnostic stuff, find the piece that's broken, and then deliver a symptom-suppressive medicine for that piece. And MDs also believe, their philosophy trains them to believe, that the body does not have the ability to fix itself. From their point of view, if it had the ability to fix itself, it never would have gotten sick in the first place. So once you're sick, you're screwed, and you have to march in and control the metabolism of the body with symptom-suppressive synthetic pharmaceutical medicines. In this case, allopathic MD-directed medicine is very much like communism, because communist dictatorships believe that the population is too stupid to take care of itself and has to be controlled. Every aspect of the population must be controlled. All of the education, all of the media, everything that they do has to be controlled by the state, which knows better than the poor little peon, you know, citizen, right? Well, it's the same with MD philosophy. But the icing on the cake of MD philosophy is the ridiculous notion that consciousness is a function of biochemistry. MDs, especially psychiatrists, are taught to believe that consciousness is a function of biochemistry, and that consciousness ceases to exist when the body ceases to exist. Now, holistic physicians like myself are trained in exactly the opposite belief. We believe that biochemistry is a function of consciousness. We believe that the human being, the essence of a human being, is a soul force, a spiritual force which inhabits the human body. And this spiritual, unmeasurable, metaphysical soul force existed before conception and persists after death. But MDs, in their reductionistic, allopathic, lopsided philosophy of life, are taught that they can only believe in things that can be measured, right? It's very Newtonian. So since nobody has ever dissected the soul out of a corpse, nor revealed it with an MRI or a CT scan or an X-ray or an ultrasound, to the reductionistic MD, it therefore does not exist. And since it does not exist, it can have zero impact on anything else. In this regard, MDs have thrown the baby out with the bathwater, because if consciousness does exist, if consciousness exists a priori, if consciousness is our true nature, then the relationship of the soul with the body is extremely important. And guess what happens at the moment of death? When the soul leaves the body at the moment of death, what happens to the body? It decomposes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, from a biochemical point of view, it's exactly the same stuff that's in the body. So why all of a sudden does the body start to decompose? And by the way, how was the body able in the first place to grow itself all by itself from a single-celled organism into the magnificent manifestation of us? Well, from the holistic point of view, it was informed by the soul force, and that's what did it. And when the soul force, when Elvis leaves the building, at the end of life, the whole thing falls apart. So, but, you know, not to get too metaphysical here, right? Because we really need to dial that back. But it's an interesting thing to think about.
I agree.
MD, reductionistic allopathic doctors, are taught to believe, and their practice of medicine, especially psychiatric medicine, revolves around the false belief that consciousness is a function of biochemistry. And if most people suffering with, you know, a mental disorder knew that, they would never go to a psychiatrist for treatment.
Because they would have just a small fraction of the puzzle to deal with.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a saying in medicine that, you know, a psychologist, right, somebody who counsels somebody, is like a person who's in a black room trying to find a black cat. It's a tough job, but you can do it.
Yeah.
And a psychiatrist, someone who dispenses drugs, you know, psychotropic drugs, you know, mood-influencing drugs, is like a person who's in a black room trying to find a black cat that's not there.
Right.
Exactly. It's futile. They can't.
But there are those psychologists who delve deeply into people's, and they're perfectly fine with all sorts of spiritual concepts. I interviewed Dr. George Steinfeld, who was related to Alan Steinfeld, and Alan Steinfeld's been talking about spirituality and talking to Deepak Chopra and for years. So his outlook, plus he studied with Ram Dass, so that would, you know, change his outlook a little bit. So he was more into the holistic way of treating people, and he stayed away as much as humanly possible from drugs because he knew that that was just the quick fix and wasn't the fix.
So, you know, in the world of contemporary medicine, there are a handful of licensed physicians and licensed clinicians who are coming at the patient from a holistic vantage point. And in the world of psychiatric medicine, it's absolutely essentially necessary, because the only possible outcome with psychiatric drug management is you're going to drug the person into a state of oblivion, and, you know, they're not going to be, maybe they're not hearing voices anymore, but they're not themselves, they're not healthy. Then, you know, they're doped out in the corner of the room drooling on themselves. And, well, maybe you can consider that a successful treatment, but I don't.
Right.
And it's a problem here because they monopolize the medical arena. And, you know, when you combine a monopoly with a profit-driven system, nothing but trouble can happen. And that's exactly what's happened here in North America. Our health outcomes are extremely poor. And not just in the field of psychiatric medicine, but, you know, the United States is like 72nd, I think, in the world in the health of its citizens.
Yeah.
And in industrialized nations, we're second from the bottom, even though we spend three times as much per person per year on health care than every other country. There's only one reason for this. It's not because of a runaway pharmaceutical industry. It's not because of insurance fraud. It's not because of profiteering. It's not because of the free market. It's for one reason and one reason only, and I'm the only one that's saying this. Well, my colleague Dr. Wallach is. We're the only two. Wow. The reason that our health is going to hell in a handbasket is because MD-directed allopathic reductionistic pharmaceutical treatments for chronic disease don't work. They don't work. You cannot fix a nutrient deficiency with a drug. Mm. And all MDs have to throw at anything is drugs. They don't know a damn thing about medical nutrition. They have no training in it, no education in it, no clinical experience with it, not even any appreciation for it. They're like colorblind art critics. You know, they can see that that's a painting of a ship on the wall, but they're completely blind to all of the textures and the colors and the nuances which make up the heart of the thing. So in the management, in the treatment of a chronic illness, including a psychiatric illness, by definition, the therapies delivered by MDs must fail, and they do. You know, they can't even, MDs can't even cure heartburn, for goodness sake, but they can manage it with a little purple pill, right?
Right, right.
Man, it's crazy, but, you know, since from our point of view, it's the only show in town, from most people's point of view, not your and my point of view, but from the general public's point of view, you know, the MD owns the show and everybody else is a back of the bus quack, and it's a startling state of irony that we find ourselves in.
Okay, I have some questions that were sent in previous to the show from some people that listen to the show and are also on a forum. I've got some from a forum here, the nexus2012info.ca. One of the people there said, Zook said, is it possible to rescue brain dependency on pharmaceuticals back to a state where natural plants can take over and perform the same functions? A little bit of detail and information here. His mother has been using, I probably will get this wrong, haloperidol for 3 decades.
Yeah.
If there was a natural substitute, they would switch in a second. Now, she's schizophrenic, sees spirits, stuff like that, but... is there a way to substitute that, and what are the dangers? Is there a dependency? Does it have to do with the amount of time, 3 decades, that she's been on this medication?
Well, certainly we need to break this down, right? So from the ground substance that we come at everything from is the fundamental belief that the human body has the ability to fix itself and maintain its health, mental, physical, and emotional health, if it has all of the raw materials that it needs to do that, and if you stop consuming food and beverages that are harmful to the body. So, you know, when you clean up your diet and fill your body's nutritional tank every day, our position is that your body can recover. Now, illnesses like schizophrenia and cancer are complicated illnesses. And they are among the most difficult things to recover from. High blood pressure is easy to recover from. Type 2 diabetes, arthritis, fibromyalgia, depression, insomnia, anxiety and panic attacks, attention deficit disorder. These are easy things to help people recover from. But full-blown schizophrenia, that's hard to help people recover from. But what do we do? In any case, what do we do? And by the way, you know, our position here is that we don't need to find an alternative to the pharmaceutical agent, because the pharmaceutical agent is just suppressing and managing the symptom. We need to find a holistic treatment which lifts the person back into a state of optimal health so that the schizophrenia or the depression or the anxiety and panic attacks or the mania or the insomnia or the suicidal ideation or the attention deficit disorder or the high blood pressure or the arthritis or the fibromyalgia goes away. Because those things only show up when the body is out of balance. And the goal here every single time is not to give somebody a crutch so that they can hobble through life in kind of a semi-medicated state, whether it's through a botanical medication or a pharmaceutical medication. The goal here is to support and promote the body's ability to fix itself 100%. Now, there's a lot of work that's been done in holistic medicine, in the mental health field, with heavy metal toxicity and environmental toxicity. You know, like if there's way too much copper in your blood, that's a catalyst for schizophrenia. If there's an imbalance of amino acids, if there's an imbalance of essential fatty acids, if there's not enough amino acids like tryptophan, that's a very famous one historically. All kinds of things can happen here, right? So what we attempt to do every time is bring the body back into an optimal state of health. And how do we do that? We do that by not searching the planet for that one special herb that's going to medicate the patient's symptoms with less side effects than the prescription medicine, but we want to deliver a comprehensive holistic treatment which lifts the person into health and increases the chances – of their system being able to remedy and fix itself. And that's a better treatment.
Okay. So
does that make sense?
That does make sense.
And the second part of that question was, yes, the longer that people are on prescription medicines, especially benzodiazepines, Zoloft, Xanax, right? Xanax is a very commonly prescribed antipsychotic medication, and it's extremely addictive. It's more addictive than heroin. It's a chemical addiction. When you take certain synthetic drugs, especially if the center of gravity of the treatment is on brain chemistry, you can develop a chemical addiction to it, the same way you develop a chemical addiction to heroin or nicotine.
Could you also develop sort of an immunity to it so that it's whatever it was doing to help you just wears off slowly over time?
Yeah, and then they have to switch you out to the next new designer drug, and then 5 years later the next new designer drug, or they have to up the dosage, or they have to start to combining things and doing the experimentation basically on living human people. And it's a problem because, and you know, all of these things, remember, from the proper perspective, everything makes sense, right? So if these therapeutics were effective in a healing way, the person would be brought to a state of health and the symptoms would go away and they'd be able to stop taking the medication. But the medications can't heal anything. In the best possible situation, they can manage it. So the person exists in a medicated state for their entire life. And then, you know, every 5 or 7 years, they've got to up the prescription or change it out to something else because they've habituated to the effects. And because everybody does this, because the MDs have monopolized the playing field for the last 100 years, this is what we're used to. And so this is what we expect. So, you know, we've got it in our heads that, you know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest model is really the only model, and let's just hope to God we don't get that bad. And it's not the only model. And it's a crying shame. You know, if I was king of the world, the psychiatric branch of medicine, I would defund it overnight, and I would throw millions of dollars of research and clinical work into the holistic treatment of psychiatric disorders, because that's where the cure lies, in my point of view.
Okay. I've got another question here from a member called Manny. Doctors willing to prescribe drugs, not really knowing or caring their long-term effects, just to make bonuses. Will they try every drug they can because they do not have the actual answer to the cure?
Yes, and that's an excellent point. Now, Manny's got it dead on the money. But listen, it's not because medical doctors are evil, you know, scientists, or the, you know, they have a sadistic bent. It's not like that. It's because the education of an MD is a meat grinder. And when you come out of allopathic MD reductionist school and do all of your clinical rounds, you are brainwashed into believing that if I wasn't taught it in medical school, it's not valid. MDs actually believe that their you-know-what doesn't stink and that their solutions are the only solutions. And even if they're crappy solutions, you've got no choice. So just shut up and take it and, you know, deal with the side effects, buddy, because we're the only show in town. So medical doctors prescribe drugs even though they get lousy results from prescribing drugs because it's the only thing they know how to do. And they have been taught that everybody else's therapeutics are inferior and dangerous when exactly the opposite is true. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, and this was published like 8-9 years ago, modern medical treatments are the third leading cause of death in the United States, the third leading cause of death. According to the United States Department of Health and Human Services, 15,000 Medicare patients a month are killed by MD-directed treatments. And we still go to these people with our hat in our hand. We pay hard-earned money out of our pockets in the U.S. in insurance premiums, every month to gain access to their ineffective, dangerous treatments. And they have the nerve to turn around and say, oh, don't go to those naturopaths. They're dangerous. Well, guess what? It's exactly the opposite. But when you monopolize an industry, you can say whatever you want and get away with it. And it's a problem. And this is why Dr. Wallach, my mentor, set up his company, Youngevity, as a network business. Because the front door of medicine is guarded by the pharmaceutical industry. It's big business here, folks. Snap out of it. It is impossible for us to get our message of health recovery through medical nutrition through the front door. We can't do it. So we are growing a grassroots coalition of the informed to help us carry our message as far and as rapidly as possible of health recovery through medical nutrition. It costs $10 to join us. $10, you can become a member of FBI Youngevity, and we will teach you our health recovery methods, and we will pay you to do it. We will pay you to show your friends and family and church members the wonders of medical nutrition. We will pay you to drag people into the light of medical nutrition, because as God is my witness, we are suffering needlessly here for nothing other than a simple lack of knowledge.
And so you deal with people on a daily basis, helping treat them with natural remedies. But it's
also
an educational thing, isn't it?
It is. It's a gigantic educational thing. But, you know, there are two myths that we suffer from here in North America. Myth number one is that the MD is the undisputed king of medicine and everybody else is a back-of-the-bus quack. It's not true. MDs are trained in one branch of medicine, and it's really good for surgery, it's really good for trauma, and it's really good for some infections, like pneumonia and bronchitis and strep. But for everything else, it stinks. Not only does it stink, but it's dangerous. The other myth that we suffer from is that healing is some complicated, sophisticated process which should only be attempted by MDs working in multi-million-dollar high-tech facilities. It's nonsense. Healing is easy. Surgery is complicated. Well, you want to try to remove somebody's gallbladder or kidney or pull a bullet out of somebody's arm or stitch up a bleeding artery. You better have medical training. But to help people recover from depression and anxiety and panic attacks and type 2 diabetes and insomnia and arthritis and high blood pressure, it's easy. It's easier than falling off a potato truck because all of these things are nutrient deficiency diseases. And so, you know, we educate people. We bust myths. We're like medical mythbusters. You know, healing is easy, folks. It's easy. And if you're frustrated with, you know, your prescription medications for whatever it is you've got, chances are we have a science-based, clinically verified, safe and effective method that's available for health recovery. And you don't know what you're missing, because this is medical nutrition, properly applied medical nutrition, is the best kept secret in the medical world in the 21st century.
Mm. Do you think people are living in the fear factor, though? They realize that when they take the pills, it helps their bipolar disorder. Therefore, they've got a fear mechanism that says, well, I can't stop taking the pills. I have to spend $600 a month, or I'm going to go back to the way I was. Do you see the fear factor there?
Yeah, I do. Well, it's the fear factor that props up the entire medical industry. That's the only reason that they're still in business. It's the only reason that they're still in business. Number one, because they monopolize everything. They're the only show in town. They outlaw the practice of other types of medicine, right? They don't let anybody else do any other type of medicine. So the only option that people have is what they have to sell. And they sell it through fear. I mean, that's why, you know, they still get patients, even though their therapeutics don't work. They get patients because, you know, their therapeutics work a little bit. Maybe you feel a little bit better, right? Maybe your bipolar is toned down a little bit, but you're not healthy. You're not your normal self. You're not an optimally functioning human being. But because you're surrounded by people who are taking the MD's treatments, nobody is an optimally functioning human being. We're like a ship of fools. We don't know that there are science-based, clinically verified alternatives. We don't know, and your MD doesn't know it. And if they do, they're not going to tell you, because it's not going to cut into their profit. And medicine is a for profit industry. So quite frankly, it's the fear factor props the whole darn thing up.
So what do we know about bipolar? It's a big word out there now. I mean, it's you can go down the street and ask everybody what drugs they're on, you know, I was treated for, and they'll say bipolar. What do we know about this?
We don't know a whole lot. More and more people are being diagnosed with bipolar, and more kids are being diagnosed with ADD. And whether or not they really have bipolar or whether or not they really have ADD is anybody's guess. Because, you know, if you hunt around long enough, if you do enough diagnostic work, you can find something that's wrong, or you can make a diagnosis. And, you know, since it's like, you know, it's like the police here in the United States. In Chicago in the 60s, if you were a cop and you weren't making $100,000 a year on the side, there was something wrong with you because it was a dirty industry. I've got patients that were cops in Chicago, and they've told me the stories. I don't know what it's like now, but it was like that then. And, you know, it's a dirty industry, and it's the same with medicine now. The MDs have the whole thing locked up. They've got it all locked up. So, and they're not going to throw one of their own under the bus. For goodness sake, I was reading an article in the newspaper just 2 weeks ago. A woman, an Asian woman, she was a United States citizen of Asian descent, went into a hospital to give birth, and they cut her arms and her legs off because they got her mixed up with another patient. They cut her arms and her legs off. And they found out that the reason that it happened was because the doctor was high on some type of street drug while he was in the surgical theater. And did he get suspended? Did he get fined? Was there an OSHA ticket? No. As a matter of fact, he did a similar thing 3 weeks before that to another patient. He was still working in the hospital. But, you know, they're not going to throw one of their own under the bus. So what difference does it make if the patient doesn't really have bipolar? You know, that doctor made their best guess. And, you know, medicine, that's why they call it the practice of medicine. So maybe they do, maybe they don't. You know, they're going to diagnose it and treat it because it's a for-profit industry. Now, from our vantage point, bipolar is a multiple mineral deficiency illness. It's a cholesterol deficiency, and it's exacerbated by your body's inability to process blood sugar efficiently. So it's a number of different things. You know, it's like an automobile that has a leak in one of the tires. It has a leak in the oil pan. The oil hasn't been changed in 5 years. One of the spark plug wires is loose. And the transmission fluid is down, you know, 10 millimeters. I mean, there's a lot of different things going on, and the car's running like a piece of crap. So from the holistic point of view, when you put somebody on a good diet, when you give somebody all of their nutrients and help them, help the different systems of the body to optimize function, bipolar goes away. I mean, it goes away. So
you've dealt with this with some of your patients as well?
Yeah, I've seen hundreds of people with bipolar.
Okay.
The thing that I have seen the least amount of success with is schizophrenia. That's a very tricky illness. That is a very, very tricky illness. But bipolar, anxiety, panic attacks, depression, these things are relatively, I'm not going to say easy to treat, but they're not difficult.
They're treatable.
They're treatable, oh yeah.
Curable.
Yeah. Well, we can't use the cure word. Because in the United States, now I want you to chew on this for a while, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how it is in Canada, but in the United States, the only thing that can cure anything is a prescription drug. I could have 1,000 patients, you know, with depression, diagnosed depression, or bipolar disorder, or ADD, or high blood pressure, or arthritis, osteoarthritis. They could follow my advice. You know, I'm a licensed physician, right? I'm a licensed physician in the United States. They could follow my advice and completely recover from their illness, completely recover. And I would not be able to say I can cure it. And if I did say I could cure it, I'd be taken to jail. Because in the U.S., the only thing that can cure anything is a drug. And that's just not right. So we can't say we can cure this, and we're not. What we're saying is we can make the symptoms go away 100%.
Yeah, it's pretty much saying the same thing without actually saying the same thing. Wild. Okay, I have another question here from Oda. Doctors are given only a few minutes to work with every patient if they want to make money. They just run them through. And many people will shop around for a doctor just to give them the drug that they want. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's how that came about, from direct-to-consumer advertising. You know, it's like all these commercials that we see on TV now educating the patient how good this particular drug is supposed to be for this particular condition, right? So now the patient tells the doctor what drug to give them, right? And you know why that continues? They continue to do that? Because it works. I mean, direct-to-consumer advertising is a profitable thing for the pharmaceutical companies. They continue to roll it out because it works. Right. The doctor doesn't care. But the other piece to this is that the reason that when you go to an MD who is trained in an allopathic reductionistic philosophy of medicine, right? That's their ground, that's their point of reference. Their philosophical point of reference is allopathic reductionism. So you're lucky if you spend 5 minutes with the doctor. You're lucky. The rest of the time is spent with all of this diagnostic stuff, right? Blood work, urinalysis, x-ray, ultrasound, MRI, CT scan. All of this diagnostic stuff, you are thrown into a diagnostic mill, because from the physician's point of view, from the allopathic MD's point of view, what you have to say about your illness, what your experience is of your illness, is irrelevant. What is relevant is objective data. What does the blood say? What does the ultrasound say? What does the CT scan say? Because their philosophy argues that they must dissect the body to the smallest piece that they can find that's broken and deliver a medicine for that one piece, which is why when you go to the MD, this is why you spend 2 minutes with the medical doctor, all the rest of the time in the diagnostic discovery. And then, right, you're given one medicine for your blood pressure, one medicine for your type 2 diabetes, one medicine for your anxiety, one medicine for your heartburn, one medicine to pee, one medicine not to pee, one medicine to poop, one medicine not to poop, right? You need a medicine to fall asleep, a medicine to wake up. Each piece gets its own medicine. And the medicines don't fix anything. They manage the situation. Medical doctors, bless their hearts, do not practice health care. They practice disease management, and there is a gigantic difference between health care and disease management. And we all need to collectively snap out of it. Now, listen, if you're in an automobile accident, you're bleeding to death, you have pneumonia or bronchitis, or you really do need that gallbladder removed for whatever reason, then go to those people, because that's where they excel. That is their forte, and they should be applauded for the advances that they've made in those arenas. But for everything else, stay the hell away, because not only will their therapeutics not help you, but 5 out of 10, you know, 5 will get you 10, that they'll hurt you in the process, and nobody goes to jail.
Right, right. Okay, I have another question from Gardner. What is the role of minerals, for example, magnesium?
Huge, gigantic. There are 91 essential nutrients that the human body needs, 91. And a nutrient is categorized as essential if the human body cannot make it. For instance, cholesterol is an extremely important nutrient, but your liver can make it, so it's not considered essential, right? But so there are 91 essential nutrients, and here's the breakdown. 60 of the 91 are minerals. 16 are vitamins. 12 are amino acids, and 3 are essential fatty acids. So the breakdown once more, 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, and 3 essential fatty acids. Now the lion's share is the minerals. It's almost two-thirds of your body's nutrient needs are minerals. They are the most important health factor that exists. And when your body runs out of minerals, or any of the 91 essential nutrients. You know, you don't have enough vitamin C, you get scurvy. You don't have enough vitamin D, you get rickets. You don't have enough calcium, you get high blood pressure. When you run out of something, something breaks. And then you go to your MD, who's trained in pharmaceutical medicine, and he throws a drug at it. And then another drug, and then another drug, and then another drug, and then you die at an early age. And, you know, everybody sends flowers to the doctor because, oh, he did his best job. Baloney. He did not do his best job because he couldn't, by definition, because he's not trained in medical nutrition. Minerals are huge. It is a gigantic missing piece in people's, you know, overall health programs. And here's why it's such a huge thing. Because minerals are only found in the soil. There's only one person that makes minerals, and that's God. If you don't believe in God, it's nature, right? Minerals are found in the soil. Sometimes they're in the water, but if they're in the water, it's because they washed there from the soils. But so minerals are found in the soil. Plants cannot make minerals. Animals cannot make minerals. They're in the soil or they're not in the soil. The problem is they're not evenly spread out in the soil. So if you did a satellite picture of, you know, Manitoba or Illinois, the northwestern part of the province, there might be 12 minerals in the soil. In the middle of the province, there might be 18 minerals in the soil. The southwest part of the province, there might be 14 minerals in the soil. The plant only needs 6 to grow. And the farmer isn't paid to put minerals in the soil, so everybody is minerally deficient. Unless you are supplementing with a mineral supplement, you are minerally deficient because it is impossible to secure your body's nutritional needs just from eating from the four food groups. You cannot do it. This is another gigantic myth that we need to bust. There are a few things that we need to do to survive on planet Earth. We need to build dwellings. We need to heat them and we need to cool them. We need to wear clothing. We need to clean the body. We need to find and purify water. We need to remove our waste. Well, guess what? There's one more thing that we need to do, and nobody does it except my patients. We need to scour the globe, secure all 91 essential nutrients, put them together in bioavailable recipes, and swallow them every day. If you are not doing this, it is just a matter of time until your body runs out of something, something breaks, and then you're out of luck because your medical doctor cannot fix a nutrient deficiency disease with a drug, try as hard as they will.
But they can treat the symptoms.
Yeah.
With pharmaceuticals.
But they'll never fix it. For instance, if you had scurvy, right? You know, if we were pirates back in the day and we developed scurvy, you know, or, you know, if you develop scurvy in the modern day, it's a vitamin C deficiency, C like Charlie. So you eat some lemons or limes and it goes away. But if you did not know that, if your doctor did not know that, they could throw drug after drug after drug after drug, and at best they could manage the symptoms. And, you know, then they'd employ the best dentists in the world to extract all of your teeth and put fake teeth in, right, because all your teeth fall out when you have scurvy. Well, that's one way to manage it, but the better way, the simpler way, the cheaper way, and the more effective way is just to take vitamin C. It goes away.
Mm.
It's like that with everything. The majority of chronic illnesses, the things that we go to the doctor for most of the time are nutrient deficiency diseases, and you cannot fix those with drugs.
Okay. The health providers that are giving people pills for diets, you know, the diet pill things that are out there, everybody like needs to look like the cover of a magazine.
Yeah.
And this sort of thing has built up into a huge industry of just take this pill and the weight will fall off of you.
Well, it will. But we know the secret to weight loss that not even Oprah knows. And it's funny that we should be talking about this now because I do weekly webinars from my Chicago office. And tonight, which is the first day of February, our webinar is on weight loss and, you know, weight loss, healthy weight loss. Because here's the deal with weight gain, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, if anybody knows Oprah, she needs to call me because we know the secret to weight loss that not even Oprah knows, and I am as serious as a heart attack. This is a giant problem here in the U.S., no pun intended. 30% of our kids are obese, and that's happened in the last 20 years. It's increased by a factor of 60%. 30% of our adults are obese. 300,000 people in the United States die each year from obesity-related illnesses. Medical doctors, the reason that we have such an epidemic of obesity in the United States is because it's your medical doctor's fault. It's the MD's fault. We know how to fix obesity. They don't. They're doctors. I'm a doctor. Why don't they know it? Because they're like colorblind art critics, and they're arrogant. They think their you-know-what doesn't stink, and if they can't fix it, nobody can fix it. They don't even want to look anywhere else, and it's a problem. Medical doctors are so filled with hubris, it's disgusting. Their hubris is legendary. Legendary. Here's the secret to weight loss that not even Oprah knows. Weight gain is a deficiency disease. It is not a disease of excess. It is a deficiency disease. The only thing that makes people gain weight is they eat too much. They eat too many calories. It has nothing to do with exercise. And there was a study that was done in Denmark a couple of years ago that proved that. It has nothing to do with exercise. There was nobody in Auschwitz that was overweight, right? Nice. They weren't doing exercise then. When you don't eat, you lose weight. The only thing that makes people gain weight is they eat too many calories. The only thing that makes people eat too many calories is their bodies are running on nutritional fumes. Your nutritional tank, that tank of 91 essential nutrients, is running on empty. You don't know it, but your central nervous system does. So when your central nervous system senses that you are running on nutrient fumes, it makes you eat. In the desperate attempt to fill that tank up, the only problem is the food that you're eating doesn't have the 91 essential nutrients that your body needs. So you go out somewhere to some restaurant like Olive Garden or, you know, Jimmy Dean's or wherever, you eat 3,000 calories, and 2 hours later you're hungry again. Now, your medical doctor will tell you you have a weak will, or it was your alcoholic parent that's the problem, or, you know, you have an inferiority complex, or your stomach's too big and we need to put a lap band around it. But interestingly, exactly the same behavior happens in horses and cows. It's called cribbing. It is an uncontrollable need to eat in an animal. It's called cribbing. Sometimes it's also referred to as pica. You know, so a horse will eat stones, it'll eat dirt, it'll eat the wood on its fence, which is bad for its teeth. And if the horse's teeth go, the horse goes. A cow will eat another cow, for goodness sake, when it gets bad enough. Why is this happening? It's happening because the body is running on nutrient fumes, the central nervous system knows it, and it forces you to eat. Now, you know, did the cow have an inferiority complex? No. Did the horse have alcoholic parents? No. Was the stomach too big? No. The problem is the same in animals as it is in humans. When you run out of the 91 essential nutrients, your body craves food, and there is nothing that you can do to stop that. And ironically, if you incorporate exercise as part of your weight loss program, you will accelerate your nutrient loss, and you will lose 20, 30, 40 pounds, but you will only be able to stay on your program for a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, and then you will be so hungry that you will wake up in the middle of the night, eat 2 gallons of ice cream, burn your gym card, and, you know, you lose 50 pounds, but you gain back 60, and that's what happens to everybody here. We yo-yo.
Oh,
and
okay.
The only reason that we yo-yo is because nobody understands that weight gain is a nutrient deficiency. Now, when you take the 91 essential nutrients every day, fill that tank up every day, you know, you go to Olive Garden, there's 3,000 calories on the plate, you eat 500, you take the rest home in a doggy bag, and you're full. When you're nutritionally replete, when your tank is full, your appetite disappears. And it becomes extremely easy to eat a limited calorie diet. And a limited calorie diet is one of the keys to longevity. And it's easy to do when your body's nutritionally satisfied. But when you're nutritionally deplete, It's impossible to do. And this is the great secret to weight loss that not even Oprah knows. But don't get me started.
No, it's good. It's good information. I was curious about the depletion of minerals in the soil. If they use the same soil over and over and replant, and they're planting maybe only one thing because that's what they make the most money on, how does this affect the soil, the minerals, all of those things?
Well, it sucks. It will deplete the soil, you know, which is why the smart farmers will let one of their fields remain fallow to try to actually replenish. Now, and here's an interesting thing to think about. When one of the jobs of plants or trees or bushes or anything that's growing in the soil, one of the things that they do in their lifespan is the plant or the tree or whatever it is will suck the minerals that are in the soil out of the soil. So if there's selenium or calcium or magnesium or iron or phosphorus or beryllium in the soil, the tree or the plant sucks that out of the soil and metabolizes it. And as the plant metabolizes the mineral, it transforms the mineral from a metallic form into a colloidal form. Now, colloidal minerals are the preferred form of mineral. They are a million times easier for the body to absorb than a metallic mineral. So, you know, for instance, calcium, one of the most common forms of calcium on the planet is chalk, right, which is calcium phosphate, I think.
Okay.
So, you know, you can, you know, go to the White Cliffs of Dover and dig up a bunch of chalk and purify it and swallow it. But if you put that, if you grew a plant on that and ate the plant, you would absorb 1,000 times more calcium than you could if you just purified and swallowed, you know, the chalk, right? So a colloidal form of a mineral is the preferred form. And this is one of the main reasons why we have developed a symbiotic relationship with plants. This is one of the reasons why eating plants is a good idea and is, you know, one of the necessities of life, because one of the main nutritional bangs we get from eating plants are the colloidal minerals that are in the plant. But remember, the plant cannot make a mineral. You know, if a plant could make a mineral, right, we could bioengineer lettuce to make gold and we'd all be happy. But we can't. The plant can only suck up what's in the soil. So if there's no selenium or no iron or no calcium in the soil, guess what? There's none in the plant and there's none in you. And so this is a big problem. And historically, after the invention of electricity, if you look at a graph of the genesis of chronic illness, things like high blood pressure and bipolar and depression and type 2 diabetes and arthritis, if you look at a graph of the rise of those historically, they really, you know, they're happening a little bit at a time. They're going up a little bit, you know, with each passing generation. Mm-hmm. But once we started using electricity, they skyrocketed.
And why is that?
Because before we used electricity, we heated and we cooked with wood. And we put the wood ash in our gardens. And we took the white ash that was directly underneath the pot, which is called potash, in our food. There was a whole industry in the 19th century and the 18th and the 17th and the 16th of something called culinary ash. You know, they didn't have Clabber Girl baking powder back then, so what did they use? Potash. So they put potash in the bread, they put it in the stew, they put it in the soup, and they put the gray ash in the periphery of the fire in their gardens. And ash, wood ash, is like 99% plant-derived colloidal minerals. That's what it is, and a little bit of carbon. Because the heat of the stove isn't hot enough to degrade the minerals. You need a blast furnace for that. So these people in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries, because they were cooking with wood and using the wood ash, were way more mineralized than we are, and their occurrence of chronic diseases was way less than ours is. And this is one of the greatest overlooked, you know, side effects of, you know, the modern technology, right? Mm. We lost all of these minerals because we stopped using wood ash. And if we had just started supplementing with them instead, we wouldn't be nearly as sick as we are now. But because your medical doctor has no training in nutrition, because your medical doctor has no appreciation for nutrition, because your medical doctor has no grounding in nutrition, because your medical doctor has his head up his you-know-what about everything but prescription drugs, and because your medical doctor owns the show, you don't know this. I know it. My colleagues know it. My longevity members know it. And that's why we're standing on the rooftop waving flags, yelling it. And this is why we need your help, folks.
Yeah.
I can't do this alone. I need your help.
Well, I mean, you do a lot of traveling. You do a lot of speaking. You're constantly moving around educating people on these subjects.
Well, you know, but there's 400 million people in North America that need to know this. And we're like, you know, we're just a handful of people. So, and this is why we're building a grassroots coalition, you know. I mean, we are. And that's how they ended slavery. You know, it happened with a couple of guys, right?
Right.
So that's what we're up to here.
Okay, with the depletion of the minerals in the soil, if we add to that the sort of pesticides that are being used, how does that affect the equation?
Well, you know, well, that's like kicking somebody when they're down, right? I mean, it's a big bad thing. But here's another medical myth which we have a harder time busting. Dr. Wallach's therapeutics are way better than anybody else's therapeutics that I've seen in 23 years. His recipes for health recovery, his family of nutritional product that he's put together, and his health recovery protocols, for depression and for anxiety and for attention deficit disorder and for high blood pressure and arthritis, etc., eclipse anything else that I've seen in 23 years of clinical work, and I've seen a lot. And there is a reason why his therapeutics are so effective. Because from 1970 to 1982, Dr. Wallach was in charge of a massive research project. It cost $25 million. They did 26,000 autopsies and 10 million blood chemistries and slide analyses with special stains. It was a gigantic research project, which resulted in a publication which is now in the Smithsonian Institute in the United States. It's considered a national treasure. It was a massive research project. Wallach was in charge of the whole thing. The research project was designed to determine the net negative effects that pollution had on the health of animals and the health of human beings. And it was in response to the Minamata disaster in Japan, where mercury poisoning wiped out an entire village. I mean, it was potentially a human extinction event because it wiped out an entire village.
Mm.
And 9 months later, all the kids that were born in Minamata, you know, were like Frankenstein. And they had 15 fingers, half a brain, one eye. It was bad, man. Mm-hmm. And the scientific community figured out it was mercury that did it. So they thought to themselves, holy crap, if mercury can do this, well, what about PCBs and hydrochlorofluorocarbons and all this other crap, right? So who did they tap to figure it out and save the world? Dr. Oz? No. Arnold Schwarzenegger? No. They tapped Dr. Wallach because at that time he had more experience with the pathological implications of pollution than anybody else did. He'd published a number of papers on it. So anyway, Wallach's in charge of this research, which is designed to determine how bad pollution is on our health. $25 million, 12 years, or 10 years. You know what they discovered?
What?
You're not going to believe it.
Let me guess. The pathogens that we're using in our chemical industries and in the spraying of our crops are causing the problems, and the addition of the mercury and vaccines. Am I close?
No, you're absolutely 180 degrees wrong, and this is what everybody thinks.
Okay.
This is what everybody thinks. The research project was almost canceled because halfway into it, they discovered that normal amounts of pollution, normal amounts of, well, you know, what we consider normal amounts, that the pesticides and the pollution that we're exposed to in the modern world, in urban environments, had a very small negative effect on the, on human health, that the body could handle it. Interesting. You know, it was a problem, but it wasn't a big problem, and it only became a big problem if there was a massive exposure, like happened at Minamata or Chernobyl, right? When there was a big exposure to a pollutant, then the population suffered. But the day-to-day stuff that we're exposed to just from walking down the street and, you know, pesticides on the food and crap in the air, crap in the water, interestingly enough, the body could handle it. But here's what they also discovered something else that they weren't looking for. And this is, in my mind, what makes this research all the more interesting, because when you stumble upon something, it's interesting, and it's very, you know, authentic is the word I'm looking for. What they discovered was there were minimum effects, negative effects on the health of humans and animals from exposure to pollution. But there were massive, gigantic negative effects across species lines from lack of nutrients. So, you know, the damage that a pesticide on the lettuce did to the human body paled in comparison to what would happen if that body ran out of vitamin C or calcium or magnesium or tyrosine or zinc. If you run out of that stuff, you suffer and die. If you have too much pesticides or too much mercury in your body, you might get something, but it's not nearly going to be as big as it would if you run out of the nutrient. And it revolutionized this research that it actually like birthed the whole field of medical nutrition, of effective clinical medical nutrition. With this research, they eliminated 900 diseases in the animal kingdom. They eliminated them. They tripled the lifespan of the average dog. Years ago, you know, a dog lived to be 7 or 8. Now they live to be 21, 24, because now all of the dog food that they're getting is loaded with all the 91 essential nutrients. Your dogs eat better than you do. It's very ironic, right? That there was all of this research that was done that's completely overlooked, because, and it's overlooked because it, you know, it goes against the pharmaceutical industry. They don't want you to know this. When Dr. Wallach discovered, while he was doing this research, he was working at Yerkes Primate Research Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and he discovered and proved and published that cystic fibrosis is caused by a selenium deficiency in the pregnant mother, and that it crosses species lines. Both of these were gigantic discoveries. And when he discovered this and published it, Yerkes Primate Research Center fired him. They fired him.
Really?
They fired him. It was big. You know, he was on Hugh Downs, and this story was in every international newspaper for about 3 weeks. It was a big deal at the time. They fired him because there's no money in selenium. And what are you telling me, Dr. Wallach, that a nutrient can affect the genomic expression? Now it's understood. There's a whole field of medicine called epigenetics that, right, you know, has grown up around this. Wallach was the first one to talk about it, and they fired him because of it. Because also, selenium, since it's a naturally occurring substance, you can't patent it. You know, you can't patent orange juice or oxygen, right?
Right.
If you can't patent it, anybody can make it. And if anybody can make it, then your profit margin goes way down. So the drug companies didn't want this, you know. And also, Yerkes didn't want to cure something because all their research money would dry up if they did.
Ah, okay. So we're here to study the problem, not fix it.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. And the average Joe on the street just doesn't want to believe that. They don't want to believe that medicine in the United States, again, I don't know how it is in Canada, but they don't want to believe that medicine is a for-profit industry, and it is. There is no law that requires your doctor to cure you, even if the cure exists. There is no law that requires that. And because medical doctors are completely blind to everything having to do with medical nutrition, They have thrown the baby out with the bathwater, and they are completely incapable of helping you to recover from a chronic illness. They can't do it. You need to stop going to them. I'm writing a new book. It's called Fire Your MD.
That's good. I'm surprised you have time with all the talking you do and the radio shows and the, you know, it's amazing that you're.
Well, I gotta tell you something, Scott. Really, you know, if you had seen even 1/100th of the recoveries that I've witnessed people recover from, your mind would explode. And the things that I've seen people recover from with medical nutrition are unbelievable and inspiring. And, you know, that's what makes me get up and do this. Even though it is an uphill battle, I don't care, because what you get one, you help one person recover from something they've been suffering with for 15 years, man, that's a good feeling. That's good juju. And, you know, that's why we do it.
Right. And we've also talked previously about the vaccination programs and the increasing amount of vaccinations and the effect that those are having on people as well. I'm sure there's natural ways to attack this with the damage that has already been done to people's bodies by vaccines.
Yes. And, you know, let's again put it in perspective, right? If you were in a head-on collision with a Mack truck and you survived it, your body could recover. You know, your bones can mend. Your organs, if they're not obliterated, can heal themselves. Your skin can heal itself. You know, if it wasn't a catastrophic, you can recover from it. Your body has a remarkable ability to recover its health. It's remarkable. As a matter of fact, your body does not want to die. If you're a homeless alcoholic, drug addict, living on the streets, the average age of death in the United States is 52. You know what the average age of death of an MD with a general family practice is? 57. Mm. 57. So my point is, you can hammer your body, and you can make it for 50 years. You know, you wouldn't think you could make it that long. And also, why on earth would you go to somebody for health care whose average lifespan is 57? Why would you do that? You're a knucklehead if you do that. And again, fire your MD. Do not go to see your MD unless you're bleeding. Just don't do it. It's a fool's game. Do medical nutrition instead. Better yet, join my team for $10.
Nice.
And you will rise to the top of the heap, let me tell you. But my point is, the human body can take a massive amount of crap and survive. Now, when your body's been stressed by the bad stuff in a vaccine, when your body has been stressed by the side effects of decades of prescription medicines, when your body has been stressed by, you know, a bad marriage, when your body has been stressed by physical trauma, when your body has been stressed by a parasitic infection or a nasty bacterial or viral infection, your chances of recovering your health dramatically increase when you give your body the 91 essential nutrients that it needs, when you give the body the raw materials that it needs to fix itself. And it's just common sense. And as God is my witness, you don't know what you're missing. And when you actually do, you know, take a step and clean your diet up and take the 91 essential nutrients, you're not gonna recognize yourself in 9 months, because your body will bounce right back. It will be the first time in your life that your body has had all of the raw materials that it needs to fix itself, and that's a game changer. And it's a wonderful thing. I love it. It's what gets me up every morning. It's just, it's very exciting and very rewarding.
What are your thoughts on heavy metal? There's heavy metals that people have in their system that are affecting them adversely. Is this true? Is that a myth? Are there heavy metal treatments that exist? What's your opinion on that?
Well, interesting that you should ask that. And again, to the listening audience, Scott and I haven't talked about any of the stuff that we're talking about tonight before this interview. We just didn't. So it's not like he's giving me leading questions here, but this one is cuts really close to home, because my sweetheart, my partner in life, is a woman that I met. She works for one of the leading diagnostic labs in the United States that diagnoses heavy metal toxicity in people. And I met her. I met her at a heavy metal conference, and it wasn't a KISS conference. It was not that kind of heavy metal, right? So I know a lot about it. I was one of the first naturopathic physicians in the United States to do heavy metal testing, and then the therapeutic elimination of heavy metals from the body is called chelation therapy. I was one of the first doctors and naturopathic doctors in the country to do that. I started that 20 years ago. I have a lot of experience with it and a big knowledge base. And interestingly enough, on a relative scale of things, the presence of extra mercury or lead or zinc or any of the metals in your body, the net negative effects that those things produce pale in comparison to the net negative effects that a lack of the 91 essential nutrients will generate. Mm-hmm. It's a minor deal. And see, this is the problem, because there are a lot of MDs. MDs are not stupid. Most of them are very compassionate, smart people. And, you know, if you work allopathic pharmaceutical medicine long enough, you're going to get frustrated. And you're going to see that it doesn't work, not for chronic illness. So you're either going to become a surgeon, an emergency room doc, a military field doc, or you're going to try to get your feet wet with holistic medicine. So a lot of MDs are taking extracurricular courses now in heavy metal chelation and in therapeutic nutrition and this, that, or the other thing. But it's a problem, because they never get rid of their reductionistic philosophy. So they start delivering vitamins the same way that they delivered drugs, to manipulate and control the workings of the human body rather than supporting and promoting the body's ability to fix itself. So they'll give, you know, grams and grams and grams of vitamin C, or they'll do, you know, intravenous chelation therapy with mega vitamins, massive amounts. I mean, massive amounts. Or, you know, they'll do something like that, and it completely misses the point. And the fundamental point of overall human health, ladies and gentlemen, is simple. The body, our bodies, have a built-in, God-given ability to fix themselves. They do. And the only thing that your body needs in order to fix itself, I don't care if there's tons of pesticide in your body. I don't care if there's too much mercury in your body. I don't care. If your body has the 91 essential raw materials that it needs to function optimally every day, it'll fix itself. Selenium, the mineral selenium, chelates out mercury. So if you have a mercury toxicity issue and you take a selenium supplement every day, it goes away. The selenium pulls the mercury out of your body. And that was published by Gerhard Schrauser in the 60s. Gerhard Schrauser is one of – he's a PhD research guy. He's one of the guys that nominates people for the Nobel Prize. I mean, he's one smart cookie. And it was his research that showed the relationship between selenium and mercury chelation. So, you know, medical doctors, bless their hearts, have limited amounts of information, but they don't know that they have limited amounts of information. And because they're so arrogant, and it's just built into their education and their practice, they don't know what they don't know. And because they don't know what they don't know, their therapeutics are lopsided, but they don't know it. And, you know, the only time it's prudent to visit an MD is if you're bleeding to death, if you have a bullet in your arm, or you have a nasty infection, or you really do need surgery for whatever reason, then God bless them and go to them, because they'll help you. But for goodness sake, for everything else, do exactly the opposite of what they tell you to do. If a medical doctor tells you not to eat salt, eat tons of salt. Lie in salt. Make your bed out of salt. Lie in it. grovel around it. Do exactly the opposite. If a medical doctor tells you to exercise, lie on your bed and do nothing. Because guess what? When you exercise, it increases your risk of a heart attack by 900%. And couch potatoes live 15 years longer than people who exercise regularly. But again, don't get me started. There's a million ways we could go here in this conversation, but my overall point is things like mercury toxicity and too much lead and too much arsenic, all of these, and too many pesticides in the food, all of these things your body will handle if you're properly nutrified. Yeah. And that is the fundamental key. And it is so easy that everybody overlooks it and everybody wants to complicate it and everybody wants to sign up for that $10,000 chelation therapy because that has to be effective. It's so much.
And you know a lot about the chelation therapy and you're saying, you know, save your $10,000, folks.
I used to do it.
Okay.
You know, I used to do it. I was one of the first naturopaths in the whole country that did it. I met my fiance in the industry. I mean, I'm into it. I know a lot about it. And it's not necessary. It's not unless, you know, you live downwind of Chernobyl. Then it might be necessary. There are circumstances when it's necessary, but they're few and far between.
Okay, so from what you're saying, if somebody goes into the drugstore, Shoppers Drug Mart, whatever you want to call it, and they buy a multi-mineral, multi-vitamin, take that every day, that's going to fix the problem?
No, it's not, because the last year in the U.S., we spent $70 billion on vitamins, and everybody's still sick. And, you know, Dr. Glidden's going around town saying, hey, everybody, your blood pressure and all of your chronic illnesses are caused by not enough nutrients. Well, what do you mean, Doc? Last year, we took $70 billion worth of nutrients, and we're still sick, so you've got to be full of crap. Well, I'm not. The problem with vitamins is the recipe. If you don't have a good recipe, you're not going to absorb the nutrient. You know, vitamins are like wine. They're all made from grapes, but there's a gigantic difference between Annie Boonspring's green apple wine and a nice French Cabernet. Okay. What's the difference? The recipe's the difference. Well, it's the same.
You go into the store and you buy the multivitamin, multi-mineral tablet that's like about like a horse pill, and you take that every day. And go, why am I not feeling better?
Correct. Well, it's because of the recipe. And, you know, in the vitamin industry, there's a big problem with the vitamin industry in North America because it's not regulated nearly enough by the government. Now, you know, I'm not a big fan of governmental regulation, but every once in a while, the government is good for something, right? One of the things they should do more is hold vitamin companies' feet to the fire, because there is a long supply chain between, you know, the person that extracts the vitamin C, for instance, from the corn or from the sugar cane or from wherever they're getting it, and the vitamin C bottle that ends up on the shelf at the health food store. There's this big supply chain. And, you know, if you don't have sufficient quality control along this supply chain, the product can be contaminated, it can become adulterated, it can be mislabeled, it can be degraded, it can be stored improperly, it can be stored with other crap, there can be mold or yeast or fungus on it. And if the company that's putting it in the bottle doesn't do adequate testing, you're not going to know even that what is inside the capsule is what the label says it should have. And Ralph Nader's people looked at this a lot in the U.S., and goodness sakes, 25 years ago, the Los Angeles Times sent an investigative reporter into health food stores. Back in the day, in the early 80s, Ginkgo, it was in the late 70s, Ginkgo biloba was all the rage, right? Ginkgo biloba was the big
thing. Yep, I remember.
So the L.A. Times sent an investigative journalist into health food stores in California, and they randomly took Ginkgo off the shelf, and they took him to a lab, and they tested him. Well, guess what? 9% of the samples that they tested had no ginkgo in it. It was just filler. And 12% had less than half of what the label claimed it had. So, you know, the label said 100 milligrams of ginkgo. Well, it had 25 milligrams. And those back in the day, you know, they weren't checking for pesticides and dioxins and all this other crap. They were just checking for authenticity and potency. And 21% of the stuff they looked at were just not up to speed. And the same thing exists in vitamin companies today because nobody's holding their feet to the fire. And everybody's trying to save money. So vitamin companies aren't doing all the testing that they need to do in order to ensure quality and consistency and even label claim validity. It's a big problem. Now, in addition to that, there's the whole recipe issue, you know, because, for right. instance, it's, you know, the form of, for instance, is it a colloidal calcium? Is it a metallic calcium? Is it calcium carbonate? Is it calcium citrate? Is it calcium succinate? Is it chelated? Is there magnesium in there? Is it in a gel cap? Is it in a hard-pressed tablet? Is it in a hard-pressed tablet with shellac? Is it a liquid? There are all these variables that go into making that particular supplement really, 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 really good or really, 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 really bad or in that giant gray zone between them. You know, just like chicken soup. That's a good example, right? My grandmother's chicken soup was awesome. And it was a million times better than the chicken soup in the can at the supermarket. Well, what's the difference? Well, everything. It's the same with vitamins and nutritional supplements. When you get good recipes formulated by companies with good quality control, and they're put together in a way that's informed by research and clinical experience to make them bioavailable, it's a home run every time. And that's one of the reasons why Wallach's nutritional supplements produce way better results than anything I've ever seen. And honestly, when I sell a longevity vitamin, the price point that I make is way lower. If I sell a normal vitamin, it's a retail right. markup. You know, you buy it for $10, you sell it for $20. You make 100%. That's just how it's done. But when I sell a longevity supplement to my patient, I make 8%. So, you know, you buy $100 worth of vitamins from me, I make $8. Well, that's not a lot, you know. And if I sold somebody else's, I'd make $50. Well, why don't I do that? Because they're not as good. And in my experience, which is good, the Dr. Wallach's longevity recipes and formulas and supplement protocols are the best thing that I've seen. They produce better clinical results because they're informed by more research and clinical experience.
Mm-hmm. And you've in the past been willing to sort of change your approach depending upon what information you found that, oh, this is better. Therefore, I'll no longer do this other thing unless it, you know, like chelation as an example, unless it falls within certain parameters. But for the vast majority of things, I'm switching over to this now. A lot of doctors would never do that because of the fact that their profit margin pretty much sits in one area. So well, why, you know, why deviate away from that, right?
Yeah, so, you know, and I'll take those kudos because that's one of my strengths, and that is one of my strengths. I have an extremely open, practical mind. And, you know, I used to even work for a vitamin company that only sold to physicians. It was they made nutraceutical supplements, real high potency, real high quality that they didn't see. You couldn't even get that stuff over the counter. They only sold it to licensed physicians, and I worked for them for 3 years. I was a representative for them. I helped them to sell their products to doctors, and I don't use them anymore because Wallach stuff is better. You know, they're not that happy about it that I jumped ship, but, you know, I'm not in this to make a vitamin company rich. I'm in this to make people better.
Right. You see something better, you go, okay, I'm over here now. Your personal outlook, you don't identify what you're doing with who you are. In other words, you know, you think, well, okay, well, I'm doing this now. I guess I'm stuck here. You're open enough and even enough to go, that's better, therefore I go over there.
Yeah, that's right. And I never thought about it like that, but you're right. And, you know, that I have two strengths, and I think that one of them is that I'm a good educator. You know, I can take complicated biological, physiological phenomena and break them down so that it's easy to understand. I'm pretty good at that. And my other strength is my open mind, you know, because I'm not, you know, it's all about what works. This is an extremely results-oriented deal here, right? I don't care really, I don't even care about the research, man. I don't care about this. I mean, for instance, look at all of the hundreds of millions of dollars that went into Vioxx research, right?
Right.
And it was approved, and then it kills you. And, you know, 2 years later, they yank it. And there's about 35 drugs right now that they did that for, and then there are all these lawsuits popping up all over the place. So research is good, but it only goes so far. What we really need to get back to here is the old-fashioned practice of medicine. You know, well, what results are we getting, folks? What is it that's working? What is it that's not working? Let's all sit around the campfire, chew the fat, and tell our colleagues, our friends and family and church members what works. And let's do that until something better comes along. And I'm a gigantic advocate of that type of a practice of medicine.
Okay, what can you tell me, since we're on the subject, now that you laid some background about yourself, what can you tell me about the minerals of the what you're currently involved in, which is the longevity products? What can you tell me about the minerals? What can you tell me about the way it's put together? Because you were talking about the different ways you put it together, whether it's a hard pill, got shellac on it. What can you tell me about that?
Okay, well, one of the reasons that Wallach's recipes are so effective is because of his use in most of his products, most of his nutritional recipes, of plant-derived organic colloidal minerals. Dr. Wallach has the exclusive mining rights to a humic shale deposit in southern Utah, which is a deposit of plant matter from the Jurassic time period, decayed plant matter, which is right between the boundary of peat moss and coal, right? It's more dense than peat moss, but not as dense as coal, and it hasn't gone all the way to oil. And it's compacted plant matter that's been decomposed over millions of years. It's a remnant from the Jurassic time period, actually.
Okay.
And that mineral deposit of humic shale, and I was at the mine about a year ago, and I've got all these really cool pictures. I should post them on my website, and maybe now I will that I'm thinking about it. But the deposit of humic shale contains 77 certified organic plant-derived colloidal minerals. I mean, it is the best multiple colloidal mineral, and it's all organic, certified organic for the last 17 years, mineral supplement so far that anybody's discovered in the world. And, you know, maybe somebody will discover another deposit, you know, in China sometime, but so far they haven't. And Wallach has, in his wisdom, you know, his company has the exclusive mining rights. So we have this virgin access to this virgin deposit of 77 classified organic plant-derived colloidal minerals. And that stuff, no pun intended, rocks. I mean, that stuff is super concentrated, super absorbable. It's really the secret sauce that drives this forward. Because remember, the mineral component is two-thirds of your nutritional needs. It's a big deal. Your body needs minerals to do everything, man. I mean, generate brain waves and you know, generate urine, right? You need minerals to do everything.
Right.
And the minerals that Dr. Wallach uses are just exceptional in their quality. And that's that I think is one of the biggest reasons, kind of like the secret sauce, if you will, behind the effectiveness of his recipes.
So how do we go from the organic shale to a pill or drink or whatever the case may be?
Oh, yeah, very interesting. So what we do is we dig, and if you were to go to this mine deposit, you would see like a 20-foot-high cliff. And halfway up that cliff, there's about a 12-inch band of dark, it's black, dark gray to kind of like blackish humic shale, and it exists as like a sedimentary deposit. It's like a line that's drawn all around the cliff. And so that's the humic shale. So we dig that out, you know, with a backhoe, right? We bring it to a facility down the street where it's purified. It's basically we put it in water that's been distilled five times, let the minerals leach because they're water soluble. So that if we when we pulverize the humic shale, put it in a tank of purified water, and let the minerals dissolve into solution. And then that solution of water is put through a couple of more purification processes, and you get super saturated liquid concentration of 77 plant-derived organic minerals. It's a really very kind of simple bio or chemical process. You know, it's way more simple than distilling alcohol out of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically just a simple trituration and filtration process. But they've got it all right there, right next door to the mine. They have a big facility that purifies the sample and bottles it. And then it's put into sterile bottles and shipped to San Diego, where their manufacturing, the vitamin manufacturing facility is. It's really cool.
Okay.
I don't want to sound too much like a geek, but it's really cool.
No,
cool,
I think knowing details and the process of things is very important, because you never know in what stage something gets involved to mess with the, something that's originally, you know, good.
Yeah, that's correct. And I have the last time that I was there, I took all these pictures, and I even took a little couple of videos. So I will post them. I will do my very best to post that those videos on my website by the
end. Well, let's get that information. Could you tell us your website? Your radio shows, how do people access it? Is it centrally accessed through your website?
Well, the easiest way to get in touch with me is just to do a Google search for Dr. Glidden. And, you know, my last name is Glidden, just like the paint. So remember Glidden paint, you remember me. Every time I want you to look at a bottle of Glidden paint, I want you to think of Dr. Glidden, okay? So if you forget my website, which is drglidden.com, and you can either spell that out, drglidden.com, or just drglidden.com. But if you forget either of those, just do a Google search for Dr. Glidden, and I usually pop up number one, and then it'll take you right to my website. And my website has all of my contact information in it. It gives you my office location, my lecture information, my lecture schedule, my webinar schedule, how to get access to my webinars, how to buy my book at a discounted rate, how to schedule an appointment with me, and then the whole nine yards. So really, we try to keep everything centralized to the drglidden.com website.
Good.
And everything you need.
And there are links to your webinars as well as your radio shows on there as well?
Yeah, my Monday night webinars are free. My Monday night webinars are free to the public. And the link to my Monday night webinar is on the front page of my website. And three times a week on Wednesdays, I do health webinars. You know, and like tonight we're doing a webinar on weight loss. And last week we did one on heart disease. And the week before we did osteoporosis. And the week before that we did fibromyalgia, right? So we do different health conditions from the holistic perspective with our recommendations for what you can do to recover from that particular condition. And it takes an hour. We have time for Q&A, and they're a lot of fun. But those, in order to gain access to those webinars, to the Wednesday night webinars, you either have to be a Youngevity member for $10. You have to join my Youngevity family, or it's $5 a month as a subscription if you're just kind of an outsider and just want
to learn.
Just want to learn. It's $5 a month, and you can cancel at any time.
That's nothing, really. That's great. I appreciate you coming on the show. I really wanted to attack these sort of specific areas, which is, I guess, by the sounds of it, what you're doing on your Monday night webinars is you're attacking specific things as well as your Wednesday.
Well, you know, we're myth-busting, and really we're just trying to crack the code here. We're trying to expose as many people to the notion that MDs, bless their hearts, do not own medicine, that they only practice one type of medicine, and it's really good for certain things. But for most of the conditions that most people go to the doctor for, it's lousy. and it's harmful and it's dangerous and you shouldn't do it. And guess what? There's all of this other stuff that you don't even know you don't know about medical nutrition, which will save your life. And, you know, it's like Will Rogers said, right? One of his more famous quotes, I think, you know, he said, it ain't the stuff you don't know that will hurt you. It's the stuff you know for sure that just ain't so. And, you know, We all know for sure that drugs are that medical doctors are the king, and guess what? They're not. We all know for sure that the only way to treat bipolar is with, you know, drugs. And guess what? It's not. We all know for sure that the only way to treat depression is with drugs. Well, guess what? It's not. And so forth and so on. And so, you know, we're on a mission, man. And you can probably hear it in my voice. I hope you can, because we're motivated and we're locked and loaded here. And, you know, we're on a mission to expose as many people as we can to the unheralded benefits of medical nutrition. And it's a very rewarding, very exciting job. And did I mention I need your help? Join me, ladies and gentlemen. Go to my website. Become a longevity member. I need your help. Help me. I need your help. Help me.
Yeah, because you just try more than yourself spreading the information out there. And if people want to go look up his website, it's www.drglidden.com. That's drglidden.com. And you can see where he does the Second Opinion radio show there. You're still doing that?
Yeah, we have a different number of affiliates around the country to pick that up. It's really kind of in its infancy right now. I hope that 2012 is going to be a bigger year for my radio show. And what we're trying to do is we're leveraging the radio to help people in my longevity business get the word out to more people in their town, right? So we're using it as kind of a lead generator to help expose more and more people to the benefits of medical nutrition. So it has a lot of potential. And the oldest running talk radio show in the United States is called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And that's Dr. Wallach's radio program. It is the oldest running health talk radio show in the United States. And it was set up on that model. And it was extremely successful for the companies that did it. The companies that are using our business model in their radio format are making more money from dividends that they get from vitamin sales from their listeners than they are from all of their advertisers combined. So from a dollars and cents business point of view, running a radio show like this is a very wise investment. And, you know, that's how we're pushing it anyway. It's just another way to get our word out, right?
Yeah.
Cast a big net, just like
cast
you.
Cast a big net. Exactly. Okay, well, I appreciate your time. I appreciate getting together with you, and I appreciate you covering the subjects, because that was something that has been sort of running around my head for a while now, and I needed to get some clarity on it.
Well, thank you, and you're welcome, number one. And number two, thank you for the platform. Because it's not everybody, you know, Scott, that does something like you do. And you don't get paid a lot to do what you do. And it's really a labor of love.
Mm.
And I'd like to, you know, step outside of the box here and thank you for taking a stand like this. Because I know from personal experience how difficult it is to do this. So keep up the good work, brother. We're all in this together. And remember what Benjamin Franklin said. We better all hang in there together, because if we don't, we probably will hang separately.
Nah. Yeah. Not only do I not get paid for what I do, we pay to have every show broadcast.
Oh, son of a gun.
So, yeah, it's a deficit. So, but that's okay. I'm all about getting the information out. You can never have too much information, and that's what we're all about. So thank you again for your time, and we'll catch you guys next week. Bye-bye.